With our special guest tonight, Paul Helliers, we talk about the money mafia, a world in crisis, and it sure is. We'll be back with more to chat with Paul about on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Paul Helliers with us as we talk about his latest work, The Money Mafia. Paul, so much to talk with you about with this. But, you know, we're talking about World War II, where we had that purpose, that camaraderie to fight evil and to do what we have to do. Now I'm not sure. I got to tell you, I'm confused with the way things are happening. Part of me thinks, you know, like ISIS, that these people are insane, they're butchers, they're crazy. And then there's another part of me that says, what if they're all made up? It's confusing, isn't it?
It is confusing, very much so. And, you know, let's go back to the cabal and one of the tricks that they've been pulling on us, and that is the transfer of power from the people to the transnational corporations and the banks and so on. And I think it was Greg Palast who found out that they had deliberately decided that globalization was the way to go. And they hired some academics to write papers saying that this is the way to go. And they, with their huge control over the press, got people to buy it. And the thing that resulted from that was, first of all, free trade agreements, which weren't really free trade agreements at all. They were investment agreements of the big fish that had run out of small fish to eat in their own pools, decided they wanted to have access to other pools around the world. So they get these trade agreements, and they transferred power by saying that the people no longer had rights to prevent investment coming in, that this would be decided by the international treaties. And if you interfered with those rights, then the company could sue your country and sue them for billions of dollars. And this has happened under the North American Free Trade Agreement, for example, where there is a system under which if you lose profits or potential profits as a result of an action of somebody, some subordinate level of government making a rule that is negative to you, you can sue the country. Well, you know, we went through that round of trade agreements, and now we're embarking on the second round, which is far, far more worrisome. And in Canada, we're just going through it. We were the guinea pigs with the Canada-U.S. trade agreement. And as a result of it, despite what our people said in the press and so on, we've lost most of our manufacturing industry because it's just moved out to and become part of the cabal, of the concentration of wealth and power that's going on all over the world. Well, now the latest thing that's come up is that we're taking the lead again, being the guinea pig again with a trade agreement with Europe. And it is more comprehensive and more worrisome by far than the North American Free Trade Agreement. It includes financial conditions, circumstances, mm-hmm. under which our government is in the process of just about ready to sign an agreement that will limit our power to create our own money, which will limit the power that the Constitution of Canada gives to the government of Canada to have exclusive power over creating our own money.
You'll be under a stranglehold.
Exactly. And, you know, this, in my opinion, this is high treason. I'm sure that the people who are doing it don't believe that it's high treason, but it is, because we have the most important asset that any country has is their right to create their own money. And we had it, and it works brilliantly. I remember, and this is where my age is really of some use to me, so, you know, sometimes. I remember in 1938, there were no jobs in Canada, none. And then the war came along. It wasn't long before everyone was in the, either in the armed forces or working in industry and building munitions and building ships and doing all
and
that.
And again,
sort
that
of
was
thing.
that camaraderie to make this work.
But it was also the mechanics under which the Bank of Canada, which the people of Canada owned, were sharing the money creation process between the people of Canada and the banks and the chartered banks. And it worked so well, we got down to a low of 1% unemployment, would you believe?
1%?
1%. And we were able to finance the war to keep the cost of the war within limits. And then post-war, we had the money to build us and help pay for the St. Lawrence Seaway and the Trans-Canada Highway and our big new air terminals, and then also to help subsidize our Social Security system, which was one of the best in the world at the time, and do all these things because the money creation function was shared between the people through the Bank of Canada directly,
mm-hmm.
And the private banks. Well, then in 1974, they changed the system. The Bank of Canada, without any consultation with the government whatsoever, started taking its orders from the Bank for International Settlements in Zurich. And most people, I'm sure, listening to us tonight have never even heard of the Bank of International
right.
Settlements. But it's a...
It's the clearinghouse, isn't it?
Well, it's a clearinghouse with a very shady past and connections to the Nazis, both during the 30s and during the World War II. And we thought it was going to be ended after the World War II, but it managed to have enough friends in high places to avoid being taken over. And a fantastic book on it has just been written, which I found, you know, most impressive, which says that it is the government, the bank with the shadowy past that runs the world. Well, it is now in charge, and it is under the control of the cabal. It's under the control of the money cartel. Now, they're trying to get this, consolidate their power worldwide by getting these treaties signed under which national governments like ours will transfer their power to private banks in other countries, which will limit our ability to ever go back to that system and solve our economic problems. Now, there is no solution. Let me say this very categorically. There is no solution to the economic problems facing the world today except government-created money. None. It cannot be done. As long as you have a system where 95 or 97% of the money is created as debt, and debt which has to be repaid with interest, as we were discussing before, you're dead.
You're dead.
You're never going to have the kind of robust economy that we had.
You're strangled. And don't they do this, Paul, to some of these third world nations? They straddle them in debt to the point where they basically own them.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the tricks that they've been pulling. And I dealt with those in my previous book, Light, as you know. And here, the situation now is going to be worse. And what our government proposes to do, if they sign that treaty at the end of the month, with the financial provisions that are presently contemplated, that will be high treason because they're giving away powers of the people that no one has the right to transfer. They're ours. They're our right by birth. We own it, and we could keep it. And it would be a treasonous act, and I just, if there are the Canadians listening, I hope you'll get fire off emails or letters or whatever to the Prime Minister and say that if he signs that treaty with the Europeans, with the financial provisions in it that take away our constitutional rights, that he will be toast in the next election because it's that serious. some government will come along someday which is going to set the situation right. And in my book, I have a whole section on government-created money, and it's absolutely essential. The United States, too. You have a big, even bigger problem. You've got the Federal Reserve System, where Congress gave away your right to create
money. Oh, that's right.
And it's time for it to go. It should be wound up immediately, and you should establish a bank, central bank, modeled on, may I say, the Canadian precedent.
Paul, what would happen if we did have our own central bank in the United States? What would happen to these other banks, you know, the big banks? What would happen to them?
Well, they would have to reduce their leverage. What I'm proposing in my book is that the bank leverage be reduced from the present 20 to one that we were talking about earlier,
right.
to 2-to-1. The same leverage it had when the Bank of England was first chartered 300 years ago.
Now, would people complain and say, banks aren't lending us money now?
Just say, no longer will you be able to rob the people. You're going to earn your money like everybody else. You're going to have to work for it. And so we'll give you 2 leverage so that you have enough credit capacity to finance small business and home purchases and a few things like that, but not enough money for any of the things they've been doing. And they recently, with their roulette playing and the derivatives.
Are
such
yeah.
high numbers that you can't even count them, and financing hedge funds and all that sort of thing out. And back to basics, the banks should be nothing more than basically a public utility providing a service to people instead of being in charge of the world and deciding what is going to do. And then you might say, well, is there anything comparable in the U.S. field? Yes, that Trans-Pacific Partnership. And one of the things I say is that the president should reverse himself on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and instead of looking for fast track, just say it is not in the interest of the American people, nor of the people who will be at the other end of the bargain. And we're not going to do it. And we're going to take another route, which I have proposed in the book. But these are treasonous treaties.
Sure.
That's a good treasonous treaties. That's what they are. And they're being rammed down our throats by the cabal. They're the ones behind the whole shebang, because it fits in with their plan of concentrating power to the point where individual countries don't have enough power left to wiggle. And it's all in their business plan, as I call it, and they're getting away with it, and we have got to stop it. And, you know, the president, one of the things I think he has to do, was in the press down in the U.S. a year or so ago, using an anomaly in the law to have a couple of $1 trillion platinum coins minted to get the economy up and running, to get some of those young people back to work, to provide decent living wages, and to give people hope, which they so desperately need at the present time, and then wind up the Federal Reserve System and be merciless in the way it's done, so that they the private banks don't benefit from all of the fantastic trillions of dollars that they've created in the last few years, and establish a proper Bank of the United States.
How far will they go, Paul, to fight this?
They'll go as far as they can. And I think the bottom line, though, is they have the money. And as long as we're asleep and do nothing, they will be in control. But we have the people. And if the young people of every country, including yours, and the veterans and the others, the decent people, get together and really say, we are going to change the system, we're going to insist that the president take leadership and reverse most of the of the bad policies of the last 50 years, nearly all of them have been bad, and give us the opportunity to live with a little peace and harmony.
Is the cabal doing this in China and Russia as well?
Well, they're trying to get the trade agreements to apply to them too. And I think some of the other countries kind of understand a little bit what's going on, and they don't like it.
They're smart enough, aren't they?
Yeah, but it's you know, there's big power, as you say, and it's got to be curbed, and the only way to curb it is for the president to, have minted a couple of coins to get the immediate situation taken care of, and then to encourage Congress to take over the Federal Reserve System 101 years after it should have been done, and to establish a new system which works for the people the way the Canadian system worked from 1939 until 1974, when they came under the spell of the cabal and the Bank for International Settlements.
I suspect, Paul, that most people would simply say, leave me alone. I don't want to get involved in this. I want my job. I want my little house. I want my car. I want my television and my radio. Leave me alone.
Yeah, but George, that is exactly the point of view that the cabal is counting on.
Exactly.
That is the, you know, the whatever chloroform that they use and they're counting on. And looking at it from the other side up, though, the people who want to have a house and want to have enough money to educate their children and want to have a decent living and not wind up their lives, you know, in debt, with a lot of debt, they're going to have to do something. And as I say, the cabal has the money, but the people have the numbers. And if they really rallied and mobilized, I guess mobilized is the word, to use their power, they could do it, because they've got the votes. But they've got to get together, and they've got to do it soon, as I said, which is the reason I was so anxious to get on air before the partial election, the midterm elections, mm-hmm. rather, to see if we could get some decent debates going about what's really happening and what has to be done to really get America back on track.
What does your gut tell you? Can it get back on track?
It can. I don't know if it will. The odds are long. But
they are long.
But anything is possible, and it depends. You know, if it were not for the Internet, I would say it was impossible. Because when I don't know which book this is in, probably Light, as Ellen Brown says, and Ellen Brown is one of the best experts on money in the United States. She says when the Fed was set up, Morgan Bank and some cronies got together and said one of the 25 most powerful newspapers in the United States, and they got a panel to say which ones they were, and then go out and buy them or buy control of them so that these papers would not print the truth about the money system and how it works. And consequently, it's verboten. You can't go to a paper. I went one day when I was peddling books, Chicago Tribune, and had an interview and an excellent article that the chap wrote. Gave it to the publisher. No dice.
Didn't get in, did it?
No, it didn't get in.
No. Paul, stay with us. We're going to come back. One of the things that you were very well known for, still are, your thoughts about extraterrestrial presence and its existence. Let's take some time to talk about that, and then we'll review just about everything in our final hour. Paul Hellyer with us right here on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Paul Hellyer. He, of course, was in Canadian government. I'm going to be in Canada November 8th, by the way, in Toronto for my major event at the Queen Elizabeth Theatre. So full information there at our calendar section at coasttocoastam.com. Welcome back, Paul Hell. You're with us. And Paul, before we get into your thoughts on extraterrestrials, which really created a furor when you went public with that, let's continue talking for a bit about money mafia and the cabal that's out there that wants to continue doing what they're doing. They've got a foothold. So, you know, the odds are it's going to be very difficult for people to break that loose, isn't it?
It is, yes. It's going to take a determined populace, a public reaction that says where we're headed, we don't want to go, and we're going to do something about it. America's been transformed over the last 50 years to a state which is more interested in military. The so-called military-industrial complex has taken over. Mm-hmm. It is essential, integral part of the cabal. And as you know, it covers the waterfront. And it was Wernher von Braun who told a friend of mine that the industrial-military complex had to have an enemy. And the first would be the communists, and then it would be the terrorists, and then eventually it would be the extraterrestrials.
Interesting. Was that Carol Rosen he was talking to?
Carol Rosen. And that's where they're headed. That's where they're going. And, you know, I think of that this week because they were running out of steam on the terrorist front. And so along comes ISIS and provides another excuse for getting involved in affairs in the Middle East.
Well, I took interest, too, today in the bombing in Syria, that all these Arab nations that have joined us to do this, every one of them has a monarch, a king involved in running ownership of that country. So no wonder they're involved.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a lot at stake.
It's very serious, but we have a lot at stake too. And I think we should really reflect on the results of attacking Iraq, which was probably the worst strategic...
That was a mistake.
Worst strategic blunder the U.S. ever made. And then starting that war, because right after 9/11, the U.S. had sympathy of just about everybody, including most of the Arab countries. And then they started dropping bombs on Baghdad. And that's when the few terrorists that there were and could have been controlled by police and intelligence means started multiplying exponentially.
Well, and there are terrorists out there. I mean, there are people who hate our guts. They claim, of course, we meddle with everything. But there are some out there who hate our guts. There's no doubt about that.
Well, this is true. But, you know, Osama bin Laden gave George Bush some advice. He said, in effect, if you want peace, there are three things you have to do. And one is stop meddling in our affairs. Two, get your troops off our territory. And three, have a just settlement of the Israeli-Palestinian situation. And instead of going that route, which would have been the route of peace and conciliation and cooperation, we went in the other direction.
And bin Laden seems like a moderate compared to what's out there now. But here's the other issue, Paul, and then I want to get into your ET take. Can we believe what's going on with ISIS? I mean, there's that part of me that believes these people are truly fanatics. Then there's another part that says this might be all made up. I mean, I'm beginning to wonder, the lunatic who cut off the heads of a couple journalists, you know, he was cloaked and covered. How do we know he was a terrorist? What if he was one of the cabal members?
You'll never know, or you may never know.
I mean, is that justified for me to even think that?
Well, you're raising a very fundamental question here, that when we get to the question of the ETs and their, what happened at Roswell and so on, we started in the United States a cult of lying. And instead of admitting that it was a flying saucer that crashed, it was decided that a cover story would put out. It was a,
right.
It was a weather balloon.
Lie.
Yeah, lie. Well, after you do this for 60 years, you lie about everything. And I guess the one that really hasn't been talked about much is 9/11. And in my book, Light at the End of the Tunnel, I just said that there were some unanswered questions. And I deliberately didn't get into it because A, I didn't know enough about it, and B, when you're both a monetary reformer and interested in extraterrestrials and UFOs, you have two strikes against you when you start.
That's true.
And adding another one was just not in the cards as far as I was concerned. But I have since then been convinced that high officials in the U.S. government were aware that the strikes on the towers were coming.
I've said that too.
And that they did nothing to prevent it. And how long ahead that they knew, I don't know, but at least from August the 6th.
And the cabal may have helped bin Laden and his cronies get this done.
Well, it wasn't the planes that took the towers down. That took meticulous planning on the part of someone. First of all, to put in charges of something or other,
sure,
that would bring them down, because
the architects group, the engineers and architects, they believe that it was controlled demolition.
Yeah, right.
Dr. Judy Woods believes it was some kind of a pulse weapon that took it down.
They're both right. There was controlled demolition, which meant that somebody was working on it for, I don't know how long, but, you know, they did have 3 or 4 weeks minimum, and at least notice. And then what Dr. Judy Wood is talking about, and she deserves great credit. Her book is absolutely fantastic, 500 pages of evidence, and she was the one that sort of clinched it for me. I listened to others, including a major general who had come to the conclusion that that it wasn't an outside job, and very difficult for him. But he was an intelligence person, and he and his wife got into, I think it was General Stubermeyer or something like that. He and his wife got into a discussion about it, and she kept questioning what was going on. And he finally came reluctantly after doing all the dots.
It was Stubblebine. That's his name. General Stubblebine.
Stubblemeyer, yeah, that's the one. And came reluctantly to the conclusion that it was not driven by a couple of amateur pilots. And the evidence that Judy has in her book, which is absolutely fantastic, so if anybody has any doubt about evidence, she was the one that convinced me. My wife and I were in Holland, and she was presenting at a Breakthrough Energy conference there, where I was doing my thing too on the state of the world, and she was doing hers on the 9/11. And what she just presented the evidence. She didn't say who did it. She didn't even pretend to say who.
And she doesn't know.
Because she doesn't know, but She said, look at the evidence, and the evidence is that those two towers alone were not brought down by the planes. They were brought down by demolition of some kind. And then what she has added to the controlled demolition is that there was something used which was new and very different. I don't know if you're probably not old enough to remember a radio program called Buck Rogers in the 25th Century.
I remember it afterward in college. We'd play clips of it.
Right, and they talked about a disintegrator. And what was used there was a high-energy weapon of some kind that actually turned concrete and steel into dust. Now, that is a disintegrator. And, you know, they're the only country that we're sure of that has that technology is the United States.
That's
it might
right.
be someone else. But and so you have to come to the conclusion that this was something that really fitted in with the cabal's plan. I don't know if you've ever read the plan for the new American century.
Just clips of it.
And what they said was this was really to build an American empire along the lines that I mentioned from the Council on Foreign Relations
sure.
and so on.
Well, you know what? If they are, it's working.
Well, of course. And they said to do this thing, that they would have to have an incident comparable to Pearl Harbor. Well, 9/11 was the incident.
Sure was, Paul.
And look, it was the most monstrous deception in the history of the world, or one of the most monstrous deceptions in the history of the world. And the consequences are just absolutely astronomical.
How did they find the fanatics to take those planes and do what they did with them?
I don't know. But, you know, people who will blow themselves up for what they believe, suicide bombers and so on, you have fanatics around, and they're dangerous. And incidentally, we'll come back to this later, but what they're doing is not in accordance with their religion. It's contrary to their religion. But so is a monstrous deception like 9/11, which my heart really goes out to the American people, who will find it very difficult to believe that their government could pull such a dirty trick on them.
Are you called unpatriotic if you think of these views this way?
Only by people who prefer lies to truth. And unfortunately, I guess there are a lot of them around, but I'm not. I'm seeking the truth, and my whole book is about truth and about what has to be done to return to the truth and to change the future as far as the people of the world is concerned, and especially as far as the American people.
Well, and Paul, I've got to tell you, your credentials and your background, I think, add so much credence to these stories. And so much authenticity. You know, there are a lot of hardworking, dedicated people who believe the same way you do. But, you know, their credibility would not be nearly as strong as yours. And the fact that you would go public about this and about the ETs, which we'll talk about in a second here, you got to be commended for that. You stuck your neck in the noose.
Well, I know, but somebody has to. And look at the consequences. It was the excuse that the people who wrote the plan for the new American century, mm-hmm. and probably the cabal, are probably interchangeable. It's the excuse they used to start the war against Iraq.
Yes, exactly.
And Pakistan.
Exactly. Saddam Hussein was no Boy Scout, but he had nothing to do with 9/11.
Absolutely nothing, and he was on his knees already, and begging for cooperation.
The weapons of mass destruction, some of the chemical weapons, of course he had them. You know why? We gave them to him.
That's right. When he was fighting Iran.
I mean, Rumsfeld was over there shaking his hand.
But see what happened? A whole list of things. Excuse to start illegal wars. Afghanistan. If I said Pakistan earlier, I'm sorry. I meant Afghanistan and in Iraq. And then NATO, which had been a purely cooperative defense organization until then, was suborned into becoming involved in something that was based on a lie. And then as a result of that, has become more or less an American task force. And defense expenditures in the United States doubled. They were already high enough, but they doubled. And the poor American taxpayers had this extra burden to carry right along the lines that the industrial and military complex would love, because that's how they make their money. And then you started losing your civil rights with the Patriot Act and all of the things that have happened in the meantime. And so the consequences go on and on and on from something that was based on a lie. And this is the unhappy, you know, the unhappy reality. And as I said, my heart goes out to the millions of decent Americans who will find it very, very difficult to accept.
Yes. Oh, there's no question. I mean, and people who lost loved ones, it's difficult for them to accept.
Especially difficult. How could this happen to us?
The Money Mafia, Paul, where do you people get the book? Where is it available?
I hope it'll be available everywhere. It's Amazon, certainly, but I think probably bookstores will be getting it, and I'll have some on my website eventually.
Traveling much these days?
Not right away. I'm going to France November to visit the battlefields.
Ah. Okay.
And to remember what those people died for, the millions of them in World Wars One and Two, and it was to preserve all of the things that we have been losing and giving up.
Good for you. Good
in
for
recent
you.
In recent decades.
You live in the Toronto area, don't you?
Yeah.
You're out that way. So if you're around November 8th, I'd love to have you drop by the Queen Elizabeth Theater out there.
Well, I'd be happy to, George. I think that's the day I leave for France, but I'm going to check it.
Check that out.
And if I'm going to be here, I'll be glad to be on your program.
Okay, Paul, and you stay with us. We're going to come back for a final hour. I want to take a few moments when we come back to talk about your thoughts on the extraterrestrial presence. Just what the heck do you think is actually going on there? We'll get Paul Hellyer's take on that, and then we'll take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Now, if you need to email me, here's a couple little things here. It's george@coasttocoastam.com, george@coasttocoastam.com. And like us on Facebook. I'd love for you to follow us there on Twitter as well. You can do that by going to coasttocoastam.com. In the far right-hand corner, you'll see the icons for Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all that. Jump on board. It's the new media. And we're part of it, too. We'll be back with Paul Hellyer and your calls next.